x is the amplitude for that process to happen. They can exchange a vertical particle with amplitude x, where now t is the coordinate time. And it's this process that gives rise to the entanglement between the two detectors. And it's exactly this process that kind of degrades that entanglement. It's what changes the entanglement profile that we expect. Okay, so write these two down. There they are. I've been talking about entanglement between the two detectors, and thanks to Benny for his great talk on Monday, I don't have to show you that this is the criterion for entanglement. There's a couple others, but they're always satisfied for us. And this criterion is the way I like to think of it. You know, it's like a large enough signal to noise. You need to exchange enough virtual particles and to overcome the thermal noise. And so if we choose any two detectors, they don't necessarily have to have coincident apexes. Then I can just write down x and a and calculate and see when I have any entanglement. So let's do just that. Let's pick a profile. How about, well, this is what people typically use. Let's try something different. Let's start with this one. So what does this look like? It looks like this. You've got two uniformly accelerating detectors coming from infinity and then stopping, going away. And this is a nice problem because these detectors have a symmetry. They are always separated by this constant physical distance as measured by, constant proper distance as measured by the stationary observer at the origin. So this is nice. It made the problem a little bit easier to solve. So calculate x, calculate a, see when you have entanglement, and this is what you find. So let me explain this plot because they're kind of central to the talk. So what I'm showing here is a region of parameter space. There's essentially two free parameters. There's the distance between the detectors, and then there's omega, which is the energy gap between the two levels. And what I'm showing is regions in this parameter space where the detectors would be entangled. So this lower white triangle is a region where the detector, where the state of the bipartite system is separable. This upper triangle, which on my screen is gray, but here it looks yellow, this is where the detectors would be entangled if they were just inertial. Just sitting in Minkowski space-time, they become entangled in this region of parameter space. Now, as soon as you include acceleration, you have Rindler observers. This is the region of parameter space that we can reach. And that's kind of neat because this is what people like to call entanglement degradation in some sense. It's a little bit different because we have a slightly different setup. I won't talk about it here. You can ask me later if you want any questions or something. It turns out that this region is exactly the same that Nick and Greg Receive found for two co-moving detectors in this interface. But I won't mention that right now. Okay, so let's try another setup. How about something that's a little bit more familiar? So Rob and anti-Rob. But we don't have to have the same sort of facing. And remember that this region here, that they don't necessarily have to overlap. I'm letting the distance between them be arbitrary. So the wedges could coincide. They could be space-like separated. That's kind of a free parameter that we have. And so what do you find? This is what they normally look like. But the problem is that it's hard to define the same constant distance L. So we defined it to be the distance at closest approach as measured by a stationary guy at the origin. Okay, so in the limit of low acceleration, that's not an issue. These detectors kind of have a straighter curve, and so it's roughly approximate distance at all times. But anyway, let's see what you end up with in terms of acceleration profile, or entanglement profile. Okay, so here it is. This is the same thing I showed before. Remember, this is the distance between the two. This is the energy gap. There's some other numerical constants. Kappa, by the way, is the acceleration. Sigma is in the window function. And what do you find? Well, there's two key features. One is this region here. This is what we like to call acceleration-assisted entanglement harvesting. So this is a region of parameter space where you couldn't actually become entangled beforehand. So just having two inertial detectors or two, you know, regular Rindler observers or something, you would not be entangled in this region. And in fact, the specific case that people like to choose of just two Rindler observers where the apexes meet is right at this point right here. So, I mean, we never saw this beforehand, and so this is a nice, interesting new region. But something that's a little bit more important, actually, for my talk, is this line, this curve that I've shown here. So this is a critical distance that we found in trying to solve the problem. And it's kind of a central importance. So I'll explain what it is on the next slide, but essentially, it's a distance at which you hit resonance for any given detector frequency. And let me make that clear. Okay, so what I'm showing here is the bare coherence term. This is not the absolute value of x. This is the coherence between the two detectors, and I'm showing essentially, well, this is the real part of it. The imaginary part is, it's suppressed anyway. And so the point that you need to get out of this is that x is negative everywhere along the entire range of L for some chosen values of the other parameters, except in this small little region right here. And what's interesting about this is that region is fairly thin. So this is, in these units, this is about 1 unit of L, whereas X is defined for about 6,000 units. So that's a fairly thin, kind of interesting region. And this is always, always centered on the critical distance for any choice of your parameters. Well, that's neat, because you can use this to find distance between the two detectors. You can actually kind of probe space-time in a way. And that's true in a rigorous sense, because what's happening here is that the coherence term is changing sign. It's picking up a phase, and that phase is detectable by doing local measurements, just like this. So you can take the density matrix. If you let the two detectors kind of do their thing, and at the end you measure locally, just local measurements on each of the two qubits and along either X or Y, and then you send that information back, the result of the outcome of the measurement, along with which basis you chose, to kind of an intermediate party, then if the two measurements were done on the same basis, you can repeat this a number of times and start to build up statistics, which lets you get a handle on exactly what the phase of the X term was. And so by doing these measurements, or you can imagine scanning over various different distances a number of times, and if at some point you find that you've changed distance, changed sign in X, then you know you're at a very critical distance. And that's kind of, that's interesting for this reason, is that what I'm showing here, okay, so this is a slightly different problem. Again, this is the energy gap, and this here is the distance that you are away from that critical distance. So I've centered the plot always on that critical distance, because remember, it depends on omega, so it should be changing. And what I've done then is I've shown the regions where X is positive. So that corresponds exactly to this little region here. So for this value of omega, it corresponds to about 1 unit. Okay. So why is this interesting? Well, the way we usually do these problems by choosing regular Rindler coordinates corresponds to using exactly the critical distance and exactly this resonant frequency. You're only on resonance with a certain unremote. And that's this frequency here. So normally when we do these problems, we're always kind of working in this tiny little special region of the space. And what we found then is that you can actually go away from this space. You can kind of work at any distance, and you will always be able to find an omega that lets you be on resonance with the unremote. So what I mean is this. So here again is that plot. So normally we work at this point, right on that little line right there, at a distance of 2 in these units. So 2 in right here. But the point is, you don't have to work at that special point. You can choose any value of L, essentially, and you can still find an omega that lets you be on resonance with the unremotes. But that's useful because, well, one, you can measure distance in the way I've said, but you can also, it lets you choose the problem to be a bit more physical if you want, and you know that you'll always be on resonance, and you will always have this entanglement harvesting. But the other key feature of this is that if you are a little bit uncertain, if you're a little bit uncertain in your distance, if you're not sure that you are at exactly that right critical distance, so let's say you're kind of somewhere away, you're in some blobby region, well then the point is, if you choose your omega carefully, then you can always find a region where you'd be untangled. And I mean this, entangled. And this is true in general. So if you're uncertain in both your resonant frequency and your distance, well that's kind of a blobby region here. So if you don't know where the apexes are, for example, or if you don't know where the detectors are, what their exact frequency is, you can still find some region where you'd be entangled. And that's useful, because you're always on resonance in this red region. I guess I think I'm running a little bit short on time, so if I have some, I'll mention what's happening here. So what's useful then is that if you zoom in at the low acceleration limit, you can see that, okay, it's kind of hard on this plot, but the point is that as the acceleration goes to zero, your entanglement profile approaches what you would find in Minkowski space. And the way to think of this, I guess you can also think of this L going to zero. You only start to notice this difference as you get to larger accelerations. But what's more interesting then is that this critical distance it reaches zero as you go to zero. And it does so in a way that you would not really be sensitive to. And what that means then is that you have to the two detectors have to be on top of each other to be resonant with the same mode. But if you start to move away from this region, then you can be resonant with any other sort of mode, and in a fairly broad range. So I guess on that, I'll end right now. Thanks very much.